What does the scattering amplitude tell us?
The modulus squared of this amplitude tells us the probability of scattering in a given direction theta.
So this is the first time in the history of this course that nobody got the answer right. Nobody said square anywhere.
Everyone doesn't say square in the book.
Yeah.
But
probabilities are squares of amplitudes.
Right.
How can the scattering amplitude be imaginary?
Since it's an amplitude, amplitudes can be complex because only squares tell us probabilities.
I'm still a little confused how MRI works. They send in waves and have receptors record interactions with only certain nuclei, but our brain tissue is made of the same particles throughout the entire brain, so how do they fine-tune different layers?
Well, so different parts of the brain have different chemical compositions probably, but to get the slice, they have to use the timing. So some computer analyzes the output and figures out from the timing how to do the tomography slicing.
There's a lot of math unlike any other type of physics I've seen in quantum. Was this math already known, or was it made up just for quantum?
So differential equations and complex analysis were all figured out before quantum mechanics.
You guys took a course in complex analysis, yes? Has anyone seen a contour integral before? You took a course with complex variables, right? A math course? And they never did an integration? Well. What does the Green's function generally mean?
And what's the physical analogy to a Green's function at the bottom?
A Green's function solves a differential equation with a delta function instead of a zero on the right-hand side. So delta function is a point source. So you put in a point source into some wave equation. The Green's function tells you what kind of wave that point source would generate. Then if you have something more complicated than a point source, you can integrate the delta function times some other function that gives you the source you want. So each part of your source, you can each point in the source generates its own Green's function solution. So superimposing all those solutions gives you the solution of an arbitrary source. So if you have a drum head and you poke it with a pin, assuming the pin doesn't puncture the drum, that wave that you get is the Green's function. If it is important to know you can explain the contour integral, are we responsible for knowing how to get the Green's function for the Helmholtz equation?
So I'm assuming that you guys mastered differential equations and complex analysis, so I'm not going to test you on that because you've already convinced someone else that you understand it thoroughly.
In what cases is it better to use the techniques of partial wave analysis or the Born approximation to calculate the scattering amplitude?
So the partial wave analysis is completely general, so you can do it for anything, but it's complicated.
The Born approximation only works if the potential has some finite range and it's not too strong. Otherwise, you have to go to higher and higher orders, and if it's a really strong potential, like they do the example of scattering off a hard sphere, you could probably never get the right answer using the Born approximation, because the potential is infinite inside some region. In the Born approximation, you're expanding in powers of the potential, sort of like perturbation theory. It's a form of perturbation theory. So it works when the potential is a small correction.
So that means we're only going to do the Born approximation because we like easy things, right? Right?
Yes.
No? We can do the partial waves if you guys really want.
So we did classical scattering last time.
some quantum scattering. We have some wave coming in. There's some target. And after the wave hits the target, it will generate some scattered wave. And imagine we're at seaside or a lake. These are waves coming along the lake, and there's a piling that's holding up the pier here. When the wave hits the piling, it'll generate some new waves that reflect off the piling, right? If you look a long ways away, those waves should look like they're coming from a point source. So they should be, they should look like, two dimensions, look like circles rippling outward. As if you dropped a stone in the water, you get circular ripples coming out. So now in 3D, we have spherical waves coming out from this point source. And these waves are being generated by some interaction at this point. So far away, that has to look like a point source. Point sources have to give us something that looks spherical. I mean, it can have different amplitudes and different angles, theta. So we're calling this beam axis the z-axis. So there's still some angle theta, maybe more likely to come off at some angle, one angle theta than another. So if we're scattering a particle off an attractive potential, it should be more likely a particle would bend in if it's going by an attractive potential than it would bend out if it's going by a repulsive potential. So we expect to have some angular dependence. And we're assuming that everything's symmetrical around the z-axis, the beam axis. So it's azimuthally symmetric. Can anyone say that properly? So, if we're far enough away from the scattering target, we should have a wave function. It looks like we'll just take a plane wave coming in. And a spherical wave going out. Which should be a good enough approximation for large distances. On that little Java simulator that we looked at, we saw that the wave function close to the target was very complicated. And A, mathematically, it'd be very hard to work out, and B, you never really put detectors, you can't get detectors that close anyway, so you'd never be able to test that properly. So what's this K that I wrote in this plane wave? So K is the momentum over H bar, the wave number, which is the square root of 2ME over H bar. Since it's going in the z direction, it's the z component of momentum. So in our classical picture, we looked at, we made an annular ring around the beam axis and looked at some little area d sigma of the incoming beam. And then we took a slice of the sphere. Called that area d omega. We wanted to relate the probability for a particle entering this piece of the annular ring, exiting this piece of the sphere around the target. So if we look at the probability in some small volume, for our initial wave coming in way out here, it's the square of the wave function times the volume. So far to the left, the square of the wave function is just that plane wave. That's our initial state. And we'll sweep out. We want to take some volume element with this, with one side. So what we'll take is sigma and d sigma. The length of the side we'll take is the velocity times some short time interval. So that's, this is some cross-sectional area in the beam, and it's sweeping out a volume in some time dt. It's a particle traveling with velocity v. The volume is V dt d sigma. If you look at the probability in a unit volume for the scattered wave, its modulus squared is AF squared over R squared. And in the same length time interval, if we look at a volume element here with the same length vdt, and the area of the side is r squared d omega, depending on how far away we are. As we get further away and look at bigger and bigger spheres, the area of this piece of the sphere grows with r squared. So that's good because the r squareds cancel. So that's another way that we knew that was the right form, that it had to have a 1 over r, because the volume was going to grow like r squared. So that's a hint for the problem set. If we weren't in three dimensions, this wouldn't grow like r squared, right? What's a sphere in two dimensions?
Circle.
And its circumference grows like r. Okay. And what's a sphere in one dimension? It's two points. And it doesn't have any area, so it grows like r to the zero. So if probabilities conserve this, it better equal this. This is the probability particle coming in for in some small volume, and the probability of it coming out. So the vdt's cancel, the a squared cancels, we have d sigma is f squared d omega. So our differential scattering cross section is just the scattering amplitude squared. And it's a function of theta. So the hard part of scattering is that we have to figure out, given some interaction, we have to figure out what the scattering amplitude is. So a completely general method is that partial wave analysis that we're not going to cover. And then the easy thing is the Born approximation. But to get to the Born approximation, we have to do this integral Schrodinger equation. So if we write our Schrodinger equation out again, minus h bar squared over 2m grad squared psi plus potential times psi equals energy eigenvalue times psi. And we can rewrite that in this cute way. If we take this grad squared over to this side and multiply through by 2m over h bar squared, so k is still the momentum over h bar, and q is 2m over h bar squared b psi. So if this q was some independent function, or zero, then zero would have the Helmholtz equation, and then we could solve that equation. Or if this was some independent function, then we could solve the Helmholtz equation with the source. The tricky thing is that the source depends on the wave function itself.
We've got our chalk brush back.
So we're going to try and solve this using Green's functions. There's a big debate over whether you should say Green's function or Green function. I agree, Green's. We're going to say Green's. But in your head, you can think Green. But I don't have any green chalk. So the green function is the solution of the Helmholtz equation with the delta function on the right-hand side. So that gives us the solution for a point unit source. And then by integrating over a bunch of delta functions, we can build arbitrary sources and get arbitrary solutions. So if we knew what this Green's function was, then we could just solve the equation by writing psi as an integral of the Green's function with the source at an arbitrary point, and the Green's function propagates a wave from that point to the point that we're interested in, and integrate over all possible points for the source. So we can check that that's a solution. So grad squared plus k squared goes inside the integral. And this grad squared is acting on r, so that gives us a delta function. Green's function was a function of r minus r naught, so this delta function. So r here was the distance from the unit source. So here, r minus r naught is the distance from the unit source. So this only gets a contribution when r is equal to r naught. So it solves the equation. So another name for this Green's function is a propagator. So if you think in particle-like language, you create some particle at a point and then it propagates to another point. It just so happens that it propagates as a wave. Or you can think of it as a wave propagator too. So what is the Green function? Green's function? Minus e to the I kr minus 4 pi r for this equation.
So let's check that that's true. Because you guys have already mastered complex analysis, you don't need to see all those contour integrals again. So we have something that looks like we need to check the gradient squared acting on 1 over r times e to the ikr. Let's be fancy and do it for a general function of r. So this is grad squared 1 over r times f plus 1 over r grad squared f plus 2 times grad 1 over r dotted into grad f. Grad squared on 1 over r is minus 4 pi times the delta function. Grad squared on f is 1 over r squared d by dr, r squared d by dr, f. And this piece is 2 times d by dr, 1 over r, d by dr, f. So this term, we have a 1 over r cubed from here, and we have, so this is r squared d by dr f, and then we differentiate again, so we get 2r df dr plus r squared d squared f dr squared. This gives us minus 1 over r squared. Now we see that 2r over r cubed is 2 over r squared, cancels minus 2 over r squared. So the answer is just that grad squared of 1 over r times f of r is grad squared on 1 over r plus 1 over r grad squared f, or d squared by dr squared f. Grad squared of g, we've got minus 1 over 4 pi, multiplying everything. Then grad squared of the 1 over r will give us minus 4 pi delta bar e to the I k r. Plus 1 over r d by dr squared of e to the I kr. So if we differentiate once, we get ik times the exponential. Differentiating again, we get that squared. When r equals 0, this exponential is just 1. And this just gives us minus k squared times our Green's function. So that's the solution. So now we know how to solve the equation, sort of. The tricky thing is that the
even though we have the solution for the Green's function. Oh, that another term. As long as that other term satisfies that homogeneous Helmholtz equation. So this acting on G naught is zero. And if we add this G naught to our Green's function, it doesn't contribute anything to this integral. Because if we act with the grad squared plus k squared to check the solution, we'll just get zero. So that is another way of saying that to any solution that we have for our Schrodinger equation, we can add a solution of the free Schrodinger equation. If we add that to any solution, it's still a solution. So it's a question about boundary conditions. Our scattering example, psi naught will be the incoming plane wave. That's the solution of that free equation. It's grad squared on the exponential gives minus k squared. So grad squared plus k squared equals zero. And then we'll have this integral piece with the Green's function multiplying the potential and the solution. So we express the solution in terms of the solution. So several people were skeptical that this is progress.
Mm.
Well, we're going to find a way to approximately use this.
There's very few things that we can solve exactly. Except the hydrogen atom. So how would we solve the hydrogen atom with this?
So let's look at the ground state. This is problem 11.9. Ground state of hydrogen has this wave function. The potential is minus h bar z alpha over r. And we said k was the square root of 2m e over h bar. And we know that the energy is negative for the ground state. This is I over h bar square root of 2m alpha squared m z squared over 2. So e is minus alpha squared m z squared over 2. So 2's cancel. We get m squared. And so this is just alpha m z. That's just 1 over pi over the Bohr radius. So let's do this integral with our Green's function, our potential, and our wave function.
So in the exponential, we have 1 over a, so that's what k gives us. Now it's e to the minus, that's what's ik.
So I know you guys hate doing
integrals, so I'll just give you the highlights. So we can choose our z-axis, so it's along the direction r, to make life simple. And then r minus r naught is square root of r squared plus r naught squared minus 2r, r naught cos theta. And we can write d3 r naught is r naught squared dr sine theta d phi. And we can make substitution x is cos theta. And then there's no phi dependence, so that just gives us a factor of 2 pi. And doing the angular integration, the only thing that will depend on the angle are these guys. So we'll have that will give us an integral in terms of x. Square root on the bottom. So, doing that integral if you differentiate this e to the square root, you get e to the square root times the derivative of the square root, which is 1 over the square root. So this integral is just the exponential. So the angular part gives you these two terms with exponentials. And then you have to do the radial integration where you have this extra exponential. Then you just have to divide the radial integration up into regions where this is positive or negative. Again, those exponentials are easy to do. And so we'll just get exponentials back, and the terms where the boundary is infinity will just give us 0 because it's e to the minus r. So finally, we get cancel.
integral is indeed the ground state wave function. So this is supposed to convince you that this integral Schrodinger equation is exactly equivalent, has the same information as the ordinary Schrodinger equation that we love to solve. But now we can use it for scattering. So, first Born approximation. So, if the potential goes to zero at large distances, then we only care about solving the wave function at large distances from the scattering target, then inside the integral, R naught is always going to be small in the regions that contribute, because if it's big, the potential is small, or zero, and R is always going to be big, because we're measuring the wave function a long ways away. So that means inside the integral, R is much bigger than R naught. So if that's true, we can make some approximations. So this modulus of the difference of the vectors neglect R naught squared compared to R squared, and then this term is so this is R dot R naught. So this term is small compared to 1 because it goes like 1 over R. So this is a small correction. Same reason. So we could also write this as R hat over R. Right? R hat is R over R. Vector R divided by its length. So in the length of this vector is also close to R with a small correction, R hat dot R naught. And to make life simple, let's define a new vector. So this is a vector that points in the R direction. That's the direction where we're trying to find the wave function. So you can think of this as the final momentum of the particle that scatters. So we're only looking at elastic collisions, which means the energy doesn't change. So if it has a momentum h bar k coming in, it has the same momentum h bar k coming out, just in a different direction. And if we're measuring the wave function at some vector r, that means had to scatter in that direction, so its momentum is now in that direction. So we can write e to the I k r minus r naught as e to the I k r minus I k dot r naught. And the thing that appears in our integral that e to the ik over the absolute value. So that's e to the ikr over r e to the minus I k dot r naught. And the corrections that are order 1 over r squared. Let me skip that step. So this modulus is given by this 1 over that modulus. Factor out an r, looks like that, and then if this is small, we can Taylor expand. So that means this next order correction is the order 1 over r squared. So large r, we don't need these corrections. For our scattering problem, we know what the free solution that we want is, the incoming wave. Back into our integral Schrodinger equation. So now we recognize that this has exactly the form we said it had to have for large r. It's an incoming plane wave times a spherical wave. So now we've got an equation for the scattering amplitude. So the way we normalized it was both terms were proportional to A. So that means F is this integral over A. And we want the coefficient of the spherical wave. Approximation. If the potential is weak, so that it's a small perturbation on our incoming wave, then we expect that the full solution is our incoming plane wave plus a small correction. So if we write the full solution here as the incoming plane wave plus a small correction. The small correction has to be proportional to the potential. So the small correction inside here gives plane wave plus a term that's about 2 powers of the potential. So if we work to first order in the potential, just like we worked to first order when we did perturbation theory, get an expression that doesn't involve knowing the final the full answer. So we'll introduce a new vector. K prime is k times z hat. It's
So that's the incoming wave vector. So that's, this is the piece that represents the incoming plane wave. Now we've got an approximate solution for the scattering amplitude. And inside the integral is just the potential times an exponential. So in principle, given an arbitrary potential, we can calculate the scattering amplitude, assuming the potential is not too strong. Incoming wave number. Momentum is just h bar times this wave number. Then we had some scattered wave vector. Went out
in the r hat direction.
And there's an angle theta between them. That's how we defined what theta was. It's the angle between the beam axis and the direction we're measuring the wave function. So k prime minus k is some other vector we'll call kappa. And with a little trigonometry, we can show that that's 2k times sine of theta over 2. So this kappa tells us about how much momentum was transferred to this toric particle. It came in with this momentum and it left with this momentum. So we transferred this much momentum from the target. So if we're interested only in low energy scattering, so we have very slow particles coming in. That's small momentum. Which is long wavelengths. So if the momenta is really small, then this exponential is just 1. So in that case, the scattering amplitude is really easy. We just have to integrate the potential over space. So another easy case that we can do is when the potential has spherical symmetry. Save something for next week.